podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Swans Cast Podcast, and I think we've got a little bit of lag there, which is a bit unfortunate way to start the coming across quite well. Welcome back, Lee. Let's see if we can hear you today.
Hello, hopefully, yeah. Hopefully it's all working.
Yeah, it seems all right. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, all good.
Well,
good start.
Cut out, doesn't it? My computer's just having a little bit of a hissy fit there. But we actually finally have a little bit more of a positive podcast to make this week because Swansea finally managed to win a game.
Thank God.
Bristol on the weekend with a clean sheet as well. 2-0. So very good performance. About time we had that to sort of speak about. So happy with that. I don't know why I've got this preview thing on. It's not a match preview. Let's change it. It's for this one instead. Graphics for YouTube, that is. If you're listening on Spotify, I do apologise. But yes, yeah, so we're going to talk about the win against Bristol today. Obviously, it was also a good performance against Millwall that came just before that. I think we maybe touched on it already, but like some of the good positives from that carried on into the Bristol game. And it finally came to actually mean something as we got a result in the end. So we're going to go into a little bit of detail about that, some of the player performances involved, and obviously the big thing to talk about afterwards is the next match, which is the fourth Russell Martin South Wales derby. Can he keep it can he keep a fourth consecutive clean sheet even, I guess, and four wins in a row? It's been a good run for him. You think that how long can that go on for until maybe it's the shoe's on the other foot, but hopefully we can maintain winning ways there and do the double-double, the double-doob.
I hope I'm wrong, but it just feels like it's due, doesn't it? Like surely we can't have this much fun. I've got my ticket as well for Cardiff away. Yeah, I'm just thinking, it just can't be this good forever.
Do we get one easy then, or is it like you haven't been to away games this year? Have you?
Yeah, I've been to quite a couple. I managed to get it in the second window, so it was like I think it was like 90 points for the first window, which was quite high, I think. I think you would have had to have done quite a fair few for that. And then I think the second window was like 70 odd. I had about 80. So it was, I was comfortable for the second window. I think the third window was today. So we're filming on Wednesday. I don't know if we sold out yet, actually. I was expecting to sell out today. I haven't heard anything.
Perhaps it's because of the windows. Like there's not that many people falling into each one or something.
Yeah, maybe. But I was expecting maybe this third window would be where it would sell out. But
we'll I haven't seen anything today. But yeah, I can't go, unfortunately. It's Saturday, 3 o'clock. I could have booked work, but it's difficult, isn't it? Because you book it off work when the fixtures come out and then they change it, but they haven't changed it, which I thought they would have. They didn't last year and we were all a bit surprised by that. I thought they wouldn't have done it twice in a row, but looks like that's going to be the case. So Saturday, 3 o'clock. So it's a bit frustrating.
I don't know if you want to do it now, but it's just like I don't understand why it's not been moved again and it's 3 o'clock on a Saturday. I don't get it.
We'll get into it later because we'll talk about the other stuff first. But before we started, I think we said in the last video, but we have reached 500 subscribers. So we are going to do a giveaway, which I haven't announced on Twitter yet, but it's going to be like the start of next season. But we are still going to do it. So if you have been listening for a while, you might have heard us mention it before. But thank you very much for the continued support. We have hit that target, so we will follow through and do something. Just thought it would be a little bit more, make more sense to give a kit away the start of the season rather than near the end now where people probably already got one of the kits currently. So that's what we're going to be doing. But as always, don't forget if you aren't already subscribed, because it is about 60% of people that are watching week in, week out that aren't, please click that big red subscribe button. It does really help us. So next target is 1,000, and then hopefully we can really push the channel on when we get to that mark then. So as always, appreciate your support. If you're listening on Spotify, you can also follow us there. Thank you for joining us. We're gonna get started with some of the football then. Let us know in the comments what you think about the current situation, obviously, and everything we do discuss. So let's get started with the 2-0 win over Bristol City. obviously we've played them quite a few times this season. It's the fourth game that we've played them. The two cup games being the more recent ones where we really probably didn't perform very well. The first half of the first game in the cup, two legs, we were quite good. I think we were all right. We didn't create a lot of chances, but we were in control and got a 1-0 lead. And then it kind of fell away. And in the second game, we just were nowhere. So to come, a month later and play them again in the league, and a very comfortable, very solid 2-0 win where we limited their chances. We got our first clean sheet since 30th of December, which was against Watford when we won 4-0. I think very solid, strong performance.
Yeah.
Which hasn't been the theme for the Swans in the last 2 months, I would say. Barring an improved performance against Millwall, even though that still didn't garner any points.
Yeah, I think it was a really weird one because it's kind of a result I didn't see it coming at all. And it sort of, it ticked so many boxes because, you know, we said about, we criticised the defence so much and then they had a clean sheet. Fisher come under so much criticism, probably rightly so after his mistake against Millwall as well. It was a clean sheet for him and he looked quite solid. He took a lot of, everything he was asked of him, he was quite solid, we look good going forward and Cham was good. So all the criticisms that we could have thrown at them for the last, at least the last sort of 10, 15 games, it just all went out the window. It was really just surprising because everything just seemed to flip on its head. I don't know what caused that, but there was sort of, like you said, there was rumblings of it against Millwall. It was better, but there was still problems there defensively. Fisher made a mistake. And it was kind of like, something finally clicked. Because even in all the other games where we'd lost all these games in a row, and we've gone through the figures before. But the worrying thing was there wasn't actually a good performance in there either. We couldn't say we played really well, but we lost. And it's not like, but I can see that we're going to get better. I just can't remember a good performance for ages. And then this game then, this Bristol game, it was everything. They were solid for 90 minutes. They played well. They were good. Everything was good about them. So many players put their hand up for man of the match. Just again, it was a complete flip from what we've seen in the last 3 months, really. So hopefully it's the turning point of the season.
Okay. Yeah, you said a lot of players played well. We'll go into some of their performances a little bit shortly. But overall performance then, I just want to try and sort of highlight anything that has Russell Martin been changing anything, trying anything new, adapting any of his tactics to try and get back to winning ways? It's been a long time since we've perhaps played well. We, the start of the season, we weren't looking that bad. We didn't get a load of results we should have got early on in the season. If you remember, there was quite a few late goals conceded from winning positions or drawing positions, like the 2-0 win we should have had against Millwall. I think it was Millwall at home.
Yeah.
And they scored right at the end twice. There was a lot of that going on, and we were all worried about our composure and our match sort of, what's the word? Controlling the match, I'm trying to say is a word for it.
Yeah.
Match management.
Match management.
In-game management.
Yeah. Game management.
Mind went blank for a second. Yeah, question marks over Russell Martin's in-game management, and the players are able to do that on a pitch and not panic and stay composed. And it just kept happening for a while. So, and even in the cup, it happened against Oxford, didn't it, in the League Cup as well.
Yeah.
So quite a lot of that going on early doors. But we were ultimately playing okay, other than these lapses and mistakes. We've had mistakes recently, but we haven't had the good, we are still playing well. I'm still satisfied that what Russell Martin's doing is going to work. There's a system there that's looking positive. The last couple of months, a lot of those good things, I feel like they haven't been there as much, and it's just been worse overall, with the mistakes still there as well, and maybe even more highlighted than it was at the start of the season. So back then, the turning point was the home match against QPR, where we didn't actually have more possession than them. He brought a new keeper into the fold who was happy to kick long when Bender first came into the team. And Ollie Cooper kind of came and made his sort of emergence into the first team.
Yeah.
And then it kind of improved for a bit up to the Cardiff game. And then we've been on a bit of a rubbish run ever since. But if progressively, I guess you could say it's got worse, because even the first 8 matches or so after the Cardiff game, even though we weren't picking up the wins, we weren't losing very much. And it just seemed like a little bit of a drought. Then it got really bad. And I'm just wondering, I know that was a little bit long-winded way to say it, but has he done much this time different to address it? Changed?
It's going to sound really harsh, but I don't actually think he has changed a lot. I think he's playing a back four a lot more now. I think he sort of settled into a back four because he was chopping and changing with, you know, wing backs and, you know, going to a back three. But so it seems like he plays a back four. But I think before the Millwall game, big criticism was he didn't change anything. So we're losing all these games, but week in, week out, he knew the team that was going to start, barring maybe one or two. You know, he started to play Whittaker instead of Cullen when Cullen was playing well. And you think that, you know, I didn't really agree with that because Cullen has sort of come into his own. And I think the best thing that probably happened was that Latibodier and Fulton got suspended. Because then we were so thin on the ground that he had to play Walsh in midfield and he had to play Darlin at right back, even though it was a bit strange because he still had Sorinola and Norton. But because Latibodier wasn't there, he finally had to play someone else at right back. Because unless he was suspended, or I don't know if he's injured, but I can't see he wouldn't have changed him. He would have always been in the squad.
This was against Millwall now, yeah?
Yeah, Millwall.
Yeah, so I think they did get suspended for that. But was it 2-game suspension then?
I think it was a 2-game suspension because they both got 10, didn't they? I think for 5 and then 2 for 10. But
I don't remember who served in the first one.
Yeah, I think Millwall was the first one and Bristol was the second one.
The 5-card one.
Ah, right. I'm not sure.
There's a cut-off for that, is there maybe, whereas 5 cards before a certain date, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And then because they probably missed that cut-off but then got 10, now they got a 2-game ban. So, anyway, I think like that, you know, and I don't mean it like criticizing Fulton because I think he's been brilliant in games. I just meant that like he had to change something. He had to play different people. Cooper was injured as well. Obviously, not saying Cooper's a bad player, but I just mean something had to change because we're losing all these games. We had to try something different. But I think those suspensions and Cooper picking up a knock forced his hand. So, and Joe Allen got injured as well. So I think it forced his hand to give Walsh a chance and maybe start in Cham a bit more. And maybe with Patterson coming back as well, it was kind of maybe a kick up, you know, kick up the arse for some midfield players in Cham, not naming anyone. Maybe, I'm just speculating. But I think like Walsh has come in and I think in the Millwall game and the Bristol City game, I think he was brilliant. He brought so much energy into that midfield, maybe because he'd been sidelined for so long or something to prove, but he came in and he was brilliant in both games, I thought, especially the Bristol game. I thought he was unlucky not to get man of the match, to be honest. I think maybe because he had to come off early because he hasn't played a lot of games, but I thought he was brilliant. And I will give credit to Darlin, a right back, because I think he's doing really well. I think, you know, maybe it's not an option all the time because maybe he'll get found out defensively on the wing, but I think he's been brilliant. I think his like ball control and his passing is sort of less exposed out there rather than when he's in the middle. And I think there's been some lovely play where he's got us out of trouble because I think he is quite confident on the ball. And I think he's played really well. But I think that's come about from those two suspensions. I think it's worked. I think you brought in players that, you know, like Walsh had something to prove. Darlin probably had something to prove because he's like being dropped now out of the middle, isn't he? He hasn't played for a while. So maybe, you know, coming in a right back, he thinks, right, I got something to prove. And I think that's been brilliant. And then Cham, I don't know what's happened to him. Maybe it is Patterson coming back, but he was brilliant in both games as well.
Yeah, no, it looks like some of the changes have really paid dividends. So let's start with Walsh, because you mentioned him quite a bit. So Walsh, obviously playing here against his former team, Bristol City, we signed him on free from. Have hardly really seen him since we signed him. He was there or thereabouts a little bit when he came last season at the start, got injured, obviously then went on loan to Hull. I think he only played 3 times when he was on loan at Hull as well. By all accounts, they were ready to let him go in last January. That's why he ended up going on loan. But he had a really good preseason, and Russell Martin spoke in the summer about how he was impressed with what he was seeing, and that it would be like a new signing and see what he could do this year, and then picked up a bad injury again, and you know he's been out for half a season. So the fact that we didn't sign anyone in January and then we had Walsh to come back in maybe saved the fact that it did seem a little bit like a new player coming into the mix. And it has been an introductory phase the last couple of weeks where he's been on the bench quite a few times, not come on, then on the bench coming on late in games. Out of one or two appearances where he did come on a bit longer, and I think against Blackpool he might come on for a bit, and I was at that game and I saw that he definitely had something to offer different to what we've got out there. Like, he's quite a tidy player on the ball, but you could tell he's got a bit of a creative spark there. So if he's playing a deeper midfield position, he's offering something different to like Alan or Fulton, if that's who he's perhaps fighting for a position with. Or if you're going to play three midfielders, which you have done sometimes, you know, you'd assume Matt Grimes is going to stay there. If Matt Grimes is there covering behind, perhaps Walsh is someone that can be a little bit more creative in front of him. So that could be something that we need to bring better out of people like Joel Perreault or Liam Cullen if he's starting up front. So that's something I guess a bit exciting to see. And to see he's come in against Millwall, he kept his place then against Bristol, which might have been down to the fact that, again, Fulton is still suspended, Alan is still injured, but Cooper was on the bench and obviously the lineup didn't change from the Millwall game. And he's had a really good game, and Russell Martin spoke about him afterwards, saying how happy he was to see him playing so well, and credited the hard work he's put in to come back. And you know, he's still perhaps not 90 minute ready, but we don't want him to get injured again, so managing that is obviously a positive. But even if he plays ahead of the midfielders in the positions where Kundal, Cooper and Chan might play, it's good to have that other option, I guess, where you know, we need to score some more goals. We kind of fizzled out a little bit recently, and a little bit of a creative spark, like that ball he played for the first goal to Encham, so Liam Cullen's goal in the Bristol game. I know Encham obviously controlled it with his back. We can argue if that was intended or not, maybe, but the ball up to him, you know, it's usually you'd see the likes of Grimes doing that sometimes, but I don't really know who else does that. So it's nice to see someone else from deep who can play that sort of quality pass.
Yeah, I think I was really impressed with him. I think he was really good coming in. But I think like where we thought our squad was thin, it is now with suspensions and injuries. But you think that we've got Walsh as a viable option now, who was injured before the January transfer window, and obviously Patterson, we weren't sure what was going on there before the January. So like those two coming back into the mix in that midfield where you've already got Encham, Cooper, Kundal, Fulton, Grimes, Allen, all of a sudden you've got so many options in midfield.
Yeah. Well, it's midfield
slash in midfield, the two in front.
And then we don't really use any wingers. So you kind of get in. Well, if you look at the starting lineup for the Bristol game, you add Encham, Walsh, Kundal, and Grimes. So say there's four options. He's playing two strikers now consistently, it seems. So who's left is Alan, Felton and Cooper, I guess. So that's not starting. You could say Congreve, but he's still kind of learning, coming on where he can. Patterson, I guess. So eight of them.
Yeah.
Fighting for four or five positions, depending if we're on one or two strikers. So
yeah,
decent competition. They've got a decent mix. But yeah, so Liam Walsh, good positive input there. Let's look at Encham then. So I said about Liam Walsh's ball up to Encham. He got the assist for Liam Cullen's goal. Did he mean to control that ball on his back the way he did? Or was that?
I don't think so. No, I think he's head down running forward, isn't he? And he just hits him in the back.
Does he think it's going to land in front of him, perhaps, and he's going to run on to
it? Maybe.
I mean, he plays it off as if it was intended.
Let's say he meant it. It was a bit of magic.
Yeah. Well, the ball that he played, though, like a reverse inside pass to Cullen, who was running in.
That was a good ball.
Forward runs that he likes to do. But Cullen's finish even was left foot first time, get a kind of like low to the bottom right corner under the keeper. I'm not sure whether the keeper should have done a bit better and got down to it, but it's one of them where as the keeper's diving down, it kind of goes under the arch of the natural body arch when,
yeah,
like your feet are on the floor, your arms drop into the floor, and it kind of went under the body arch. So I'm not taking any credit away from Cullen because it was a fantastic finish. If he was on the, if that was Andy Fisher, are we going to be saying he should have saved it? Is what I'm kind of saying.
Well, probably with the criticism he's already had, but yeah, I think we'll take it.
Yeah, it was a good finish though.
Striker's finish
to get it on target from the angle he was running in as well, and he didn't get the most amount of power on there, but it was enough obviously to beat the keeper.
I think the issue with Cullen though is like he is that number nine that we haven't had for ages. Like he just scores those types of goals where he's getting in behind defenders and scoring. Like, you know, you're not going to see him beat two men on the outside of the box and put one top corner, but he is going to get on the end of a ball and score from like sort of 4 or 5 yards out. And that's the type of player we haven't had for ages. So I think the issue is getting him that service.
Yeah.
You've got someone like in Cham playing when he plays well that can deliver those little balls. And Perot used to do it for Obafemi. Like if you can get Perot and in Cham or Kundal and Cooper, whoever's playing behind him, to get those balls in, I think he is that type of finisher. And I think he could be brilliant. And he needs like a good run of games. And he needs the service. I think if he gets those chances, I think he puts them away.
I think he's a bit like, I don't know if this is the right comparison, but that sort of finish, like would you say the last striker that we had that does that? Like I feel like McBurney used to do it quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's that type of player. You never see him get like, you know, you didn't see him like sort of running and taking on five players and then putting one in the bottom corner. He's just in the right position, getting on the end of things, like getting ahead of, just getting a foot on a cross, you know, he's that type of striker. Yeah, so I think, yeah, you could probably compare him to him, really. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, different in a lot of other ways, but maybe that's finishing is.
Well, that's what we need, because if he can just feed him, but that's been our problem. We haven't been creating chances, have we? But yeah. I think, if we haven't been creating chances, it looks like Cullen is quiet and he doesn't do anything. But then I think you see that he has one chance and he scores.
But in terms of chances, we had 18 shots for 5 on target in this game. Now, if you look at the lineup as well, though, like we've got, like I said, Cullen and Perot were up top, and then behind them, more creative attackers in than Cham, Walsh, and Kundal. So maybe it's no surprise to see that we had more chances.
I think as well.
They also limited Bristol's chances. They only had 6 shots with 3 on target. We kept 58% possession, but it doesn't always mean that we limit chances when we have more possession.
No, I think you're right. I think that, like I said, it ticked all the boxes, like the performance, because defensively we looked okay. I think they probably had like a couple of moments where, as teams do in games, but apart from that, we looked pretty comfortable. It didn't look like, you know, we were going to concede 3 like we usually do. And I think going back to what we said earlier about like changes that he made, I think with Fulton and Allen out, he's playing Grimes on his own in the middle in front of the back 4. And I think maybe in Cham and Walsh are like a 2 with maybe Kundal a bit. I think those 3 sort of rotate. Then like one of them is deeper, probably Walsh, and they just sort of rotate. And Grimes is the solid player in behind, in front of the back 4. Whereas before, I think like you had like Grimes and Allen next to each other in front of the back 4, and maybe that takes away an attacking player. Maybe with that sort of combination, that we looked a bit better going forward as well.
Yeah, it was Grimes, Allen, and Fulton when we were playing them in the cup. And
yeah,
we controlled the midfield. We controlled the game and kept them out of it. I remember saying this at the time.
Yeah.
But we didn't create a lot of opportunities. We did manage to get 1-0 because they gave us a goal, didn't they, up there, basically.
Yeah.
But we were in control of the game until the midfield started to tire. We had to sub Allen, and then we had no one to come and reinsert that control because Bristol then started coming into the game. We tried to bring the likes of Encham and Kundal on, but they just couldn't get into it then. So I said at the time that I don't think starting like the Allen, Fulton and Grimes combination it look solid for the most of the game, but in terms of winning games, it just wasn't working. You need to like start maybe 2 of them or 1 of them with more attacking players. So when it's a little bit more like tentative at the start of matches, they can get some opportunities, make some chances, maybe get some goals, rather than like 60 odd minutes where, especially if you're the team that's behind, or if you're 0-0, you make the changes then to go at the other team, and then we're essentially making our midfield weaker by taking one of them off, where they're all tired, and we weren't able to deal with that. Then the transition of that, I guess. But it's worked a little bit better here. I know the hand was forced a little bit, but it shows that these other options, because Liam Walsh, I know he's a little bit more attacking as well, but he can offer that centre midfield option. He is a centre midfielder, so he still does the other stuff. I think Kendall perhaps slotted in a little bit deeper on times as well. He was rotating a bit, but so obviously we mentioned Ncham and Cullen then. A bit more on Ncham, but before we do that, it's worth mentioning, because we did praise Liam Cullen a bit there, he has now been called up to the Wales squad. Finally, I thought it was after one of the goalkeepers pulled out. Was it Hennessy that pulled out?
Yeah, it wasn't any of the strikers that pulled out. It was weird, and they called him up.
Yeah, they called him and someone else up. Mark which Harris, I'm not complaining. Yeah, he deserves a shot at a Welsh cap. I'm not sure if he'll get on the pitch or not, but it's good that he's getting it up there now and around the squad. Obviously, Ollie Cooper as well.
Yeah,
being called up, I believe.
New squad now, isn't it? Completely like sort of new generation squad with all the.
But we said this in the Euros, didn't we? Like, sorry, not the Euros, the World Cup. He's going to call these guys up after, and it's like kind of a loyalty trip in terms of the selection for the World Cup. And it backfired massively. And now he's calling up, now we're going to give these new guys a go. Whereas them fresh new guys might have got us further in the competition if you'd just done that in the first place.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
Another comment, the haters will say, like, oh, it's because Gareth Bale's retired, so they have to. Well,
it's not so much Bale, is it? Because, like, he was obviously going to go, like, he got us the World Cup essentially, but it was like, it was more like the squad players, like Johnny Williams.
I'm not saying the fact that he's retired opens up a slot, but Johnny Williams, why is he getting called up ahead of these guys anyway? That was my big argument at the time. There's somebody come at me in the comments about that, which I still don't understand to this day. But...
It was just a bit of a, like you said, a loyalty trip. But it's a shame though, because you know you kind of need to have like these players coming in all the time, and you can't just be like, right, we're sticking with all these older players now until they retire, because then you've got to completely restart, haven't you? And all these players now, like Cooper and Cullen and all the other youngsters they're bringing in, have not played with the more experienced players because they've all gone and now they've come in. So you're just completely starting from scratch. You need to sort of drip these players in as you go along, don't you?
Yeah. Well, but let's see if it works.
Hopefully it works out.
Just glad to see him getting called up. And Cham, obviously he actually scored a goal as well. Decent goal.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I think...
Outside the box again, was it? Believe.
Yeah, it was a bit of a grass cutter. It looked like, I don't know, it came through a lot of bodies.
I was surprised to see it going through when I was
watching. Yeah, same, yeah. I think it's just sort of blindsided the keeper.
Yeah,
I think the keeper was a bit unsighted and he sort of used the defenders to sort of shield where he was going. I think it was a good finish. Cool celebration as well. Like no celebration at all.
6 goals this season. He's gone back into joint second top goal scorer. Actually, Cullen moved ahead of him with his goal, and then they now dropped again after Ncham scored. Obviously, you said man of the match. Has he got more to offer? Can we finally get the best out of Ncham going like consistently? Do you think?
I hope so. Because that's his only problem, is consistency, isn't it? Like, I mean, when he plays like that, he's unplayable. He was good against Millwall as well. He was really good against Millwall. Like, I think he missed the golden opportunity as well, but seemed like he was everywhere. You can see when he's on it though, he's got that attitude, he's got that swagger, he wants the ball, he wants to take people on. And then you see the other games then where he's just like not interested. It seems like where he just, you know, he doesn't want to put his foot in and he's not really showing himself. And so we don't know what Ncham you'll get next game now. He was good against Millwall and brilliant against Bristol City, and then the next game he could be poor again. If he plays like that, if he played like that week in, week out, he'd be the first name on the team sheet, and he'd have 12 goals a season. Because when he does perform, he's brilliant and he always seems to score. But then he just doesn't do it enough. I think if he did it all season, you would get 12, 13 goals out of him. and loads of assists. But if you can get the if you can get the best out of him, he'd be you'd see us further up the table, because I think he's that good when he's on it.
Yeah, he's had, I think it was two assists as well this season. Three assists, sorry. Got his third, obviously, in this game. But, like, considering his match contribution in terms of, like, he doesn't start that often. He's had a couple in a row now. He obviously gets brought on off the bench quite often. Say 50% of the match time he's been there compared to other players. Six goals and three assists. You know, if he was starting every game and outputting that, that's a really good return from a midfielder.
Yeah, it's mad. I mean, I went through, I think like most people, I went through the phase where I was just like, yeah, I'm done with him, because we didn't have a good performance for ages. And then it just sort of like, he does that then, doesn't he? Sort of brings you back in with like two good performances and you're like, oh, here he is, he's come in. So hopefully he gets, but that's mad stats to think about though. If he's got six goals and three assists and he's only like not playing, he's definitely not playing to his full potential. And
so I've got scary a stat that backs, I've got a stat that backs that up. So like his scoring frequency in minutes. Yeah. So basically how, say you play 1,000 minutes and you score in five goals, that's going to be every 200 minutes you're scoring a goal. Yeah, that's how it works. So he's actually third in the standings for this, with apparently a goal every 253 minutes. So you're essentially getting a goal every 2.5 or just over games, just under every three games, which, again, for an attacking midfielder is a really good return. Yeah. And you think, oh, he doesn't score every three games. It's like, yeah, well, no, that's what we're saying, isn't it? Like, he features off the bench a lot and he doesn't start a lot of games. So if that's his output, then he did manage to put that performance in a week-in, week-out basis. Having a mid-centre attacking midfielder scoring every three games is not bad. And to put it into perspective, Joe Perreault is in second place, and you think how many opportunities he's missed, which are gone in the stat to back that up in a second. Joe Perreault, 237 minutes. He's every 237 minutes, he scores a goal, which is better than I thought it would be, considering. So what's that? Again, well, he's going to goal over, like, one goal in every 2.5 games, basically, Joel Perreault is, which I think he would have had better stats on that last year.
Yeah.
Liam Cullen is 120 minutes in first place. He's scoring a goal every game, less than every game and a half. And he hasn't started like a lot recently either. So that's a good bit of information there. You've got Morgan Whittaker's in fourth, but I feel like that's a bit skewed because he's had, what, one goal in the entire time he's come back from a loan?
Yeah.
So that's one goal every 347 minutes, but that's just because he scored one goal.
And that's played 347 minutes.
Yeah. So that's not really, you can't read into that. Brawley Cooper's then in fifth with 411. So decent, some decent numbers there. And then the other one I was going to talk about was the big chances missed, right? This season. So big chance, it's obviously debatable done by opinion, yeah, where you call the XG and the other stuff they look at, I guess. But somebody's obviously decided that this should be a goal, this opportunity, for whatever reason. I can't give you the detail of how they work it out, I guess, again, down to interpretation. But Joe Perreault apparently has missed 15 big chances this season.
Yeah. He's unlucky with a few as well. Like, he hit that header on the post, didn't he, against Bristol City?
Well, he hit the post for two of Cullen's goals as well, didn't he?
It's weird because he seems to do that all the time. That ball coming across the box, that he glances the header, always hits the post.
It's just like it's the same movement. He knows where he's going. He's going for the corner. And he's just missing it.
It's literally the same, though, every time, isn't it? The ball coming in from that angle, him glancing it on, and it's hitting the post. Mm. Obviously, like you said, Cundall scored two. Not Cundall, Cundall, Cullen scored two.
Yeah.
Happens from it, but
and then you've got Harry Darlings in second place, joint with Ollie Cooper with three. So that's the difference. 15 big chances missed. And then while we're here, big chances created, Ryan Manning with nine.
No, I was going to say Ryan Manning. I think there were calls, weren't they? Like, because he's going next year, like maybe don't play him. But I think he's still been brilliant. Even though he knows he's going to end the season, in all fairness to him, he's still being class. So I can't fault him. It's just a shame that he is going because, I guess we won't know the reasons, whether it's you know, kind of a mutual thing where he kind of wants to be somewhere else or wants to cash in, or
perhaps he's too old, according to the owners.
Oh yeah, yeah. Apparently Cyrus Christie was too old, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's a bit of a dodgy one that is. I think it's done the rounds on Twitter this week.
Absolutely mental.
But he did say one of the owners really wanted to sign him, and the other one said he was too old and it was no value.
They just,
he was 29 like, at the time, yeah.
That's like a stats
that's
thing.
That's exactly the same reason why they're not playing Norton 100. But now I've heard that. And why now in a new deal. We're not going to offer him a new deal. He's gone in the summer. Stop using him. Use the younger guys because they're sellable.
Yeah.
100% that's the reason.
Yeah, totally agree.
It's like, who else? Like Bennett, I guess. Like, we're not going to sell him for anything. We just need him gone. Just stop putting him in shop window. Just don't worry about it. Just don't use him.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense now, doesn't it? You can see the attitude. I think it's all like, I think it just seems like that money ball thing, isn't it? Where it's just all on stats. It's just like,
yeah,
you know, 29-year-old player or whatever it is, that's not value. So we won't,
because
we won't invest in that.
He's probably asking for high wages that weren't unaffordable, but they didn't deem the wages that Christie was asking worth a 29-year-old. Like
value for money sort of thing, yeah.
That's obviously what it is. Yeah. Like, how old's Manning now? Because obviously wages is the thing with him. And I'm wondering if it's like, if he was 21, would they have perhaps given him what he's asking for?
Probably.
And I know he's not even the oldest. Like, he's 26.
Well, like you said about the window, like they were willing to make, well, we can assume they were willing to make Carl and Grant like the highest paid player in the squad, but not renew Manning's contract.
But then it's like, are they also rash in a way of they like, they knew they fucked up. So it was like,
it's definitely language, an element
they
of that.
Screwed up and it was like, oh, let's recover it by doing this. Whereas the principles are usually that, and the principles is what got him into the situation where they probably were in a situation they had to then look at Carl and Grant.
Yeah, there's probably always definitely an element to that. Definitely.
Maybe like Martin wasn't kicking off so much about Christie because he was under the impression that they would go and get someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But then I know we've kind of sidetracked a bit here, but obviously it's good conversation to have. And then I also question how you can make that decision on Cyrus Christie because he's not a sellable asset, so I don't want to spend the money on him. But you're happy to like loan anyone because this is, they're not a sellable asset either. So Sorinola was the one that come in, yeah? Yes, he fits the age demographic, but he's not your player that you're developing to then sell on.
Yeah, I know.
I just doesn't, like, look, I understand the reason for loaning a youngster, but it just doesn't fit the same reasons why you wouldn't have signed Christie. They don't line up. Like, they don't.
No, but it's, I think
what
they
the
just,
overall structure or theme is here and who's making these decisions and the criteria they're following. I don't get it.
It's the commitment value, isn't it? Like, a loan player obviously is, you know, you can cut that thread, as we've seen more often now. Like, loan players seem to return back more than I've ever seen. Like, you usually have someone on loan and they'd be there all season, but now it just seems like you get to January and so many loan players get called back and loaned to other teams. So I think that financially they're probably looking at it, well, you know, we don't want to commit to like 3 years of spending at this level for a 29-year-old or whoever it is, but you know, for one season at least we can just do a patch job, spend like, you know, 3/4 of that money for this season. And then, you know, if it doesn't work out or we see another deal where we can bring someone else in, then we can terminate that loan. So I guess that's probably the way they're looking at it. Not a good way to run a club for a future, but I think that's probably what they're looking at it with the finances. But speaking of that as well, they sort of converted the loan notes, didn't they, this week? The owners did. I just a bit of speculation, just because we're talking about it as well. The two games that we've played well, the Millwall game and the Bristol City game, coincided with was it Silverstein? I think it was
Kaplan
Silverstein.
Was down, wasn't he? Kaplan was in.
Kaplan was down.
To Millwall, and obviously still down here. He's obviously had meetings with Russell Martin though.
Yeah,
when they started playing better.
This is what I was getting at. So I think like when they said he was there at that game, right, I genuinely thought that if they didn't beat Millwall, they were going to sack him. And I thought that's why he was there. And like, I probably wouldn't have been.
You said it in our group, didn't you? And I said, no, I don't think so. I think it's like, I don't think he would travel to Millwall to do that.
No, I know. I just thinking that was just me speculating. But I think it's just, it's weird because this might have nothing to do with it as well either. But, you know, like, I think he's come there. I think he's obviously been here with the view of what they've done now. They've converted the loan notes. So that's probably why he's been there. But has that meant now that obviously he's had meetings with Russell Martin and he said, like, right, we're doing this. We're converting these loan notes. We're ready for the summer. Or I've seen a lot of people talking about maybe they're setting up for a potential sale. So has he come in and said, like, look, in the summer, or we're going to sell before the summer, and these new people are coming in, and you're going to have this, some of this, and this, whatever. And that's sort of given everybody a lift, or the other way, where they've said, right, we've converted these loan notes now, we're in a better financial position, and we're on for the summer. Like, we're really on for the summer. We need you to, like, you know, push on for the rest of this season, but we're like, the plans are starting for the summer. We're going to get money, you know, and it's looking up. So I don't know if the performances were affected by that. I don't know, but maybe not.
But how much is the players going to think about that? Like, it could be in line. It's obviously coincidence.
Well, no, we talked about as well, like, he had to make changes and stuff, and that's helped them perform better as well. But I don't know. I think it just might have, well, with the January transfer window off, it definitely affected the players on the pitch with, like, Russell Martin. Yeah. It definitely affected the way we were performing. So maybe, I don't know. Maybe. We'll never know, will we, really?
Yeah, if we're talking about what's affected the players on the pitch and all the rest of it, well, Patterson come back in the last couple of games. Probably the best I've seen him perform in a while. Do you think maybe part of, obviously you've said about the transfer stuff in January affecting the players, some of the players throwing their toys at the pram probably brought the morale down. Have they finally accepted Patterson back in? Is that all a little bit better now? Like, they sort out the differences. He's looking a little bit happier on a pitch as well. I don't know what the reception was like when he came on this time.
I couldn't tell because I think, like, because you used to be for Bristol City, there were boos in there. So I think some of them came from the away end. So I'm not sure. But
I think he had two good chances that he did quite well. I obviously didn't score.
Yeah, I think it was a bit, it was definitely better. I saw there was a couple of sort of, he looked like he was trying to make those, like, mazy runs that he used to do. And I think he gave the ball away a couple of times as well, but I think, like, he wasn't on long, but it seemed like it was better than what we'd seen. And I think you're right as well. I noticed, like, when he was warming up and when he was coming on, he seemed to be laughing and chatting with staff and players, and he seemed like he was, you know,
yeah,
up for it.
We don't know the full story about that in January. Like, last year we heard all about it, what was going on. Yeah. He wanted to go because he wasn't happy about his contract and all the rest of it. We didn't hear nothing really this time, other than Martin say that he won training well.
Trundle said something in commentary. I can't remember what game it was. It might have been the first home game where he came back into the team, and I think he came off the bench, and I think he didn't have a good reception. And I'm sure that, like, Trundle said something in commentary like, oh, you know, I can understand the fans being, like, frustrated. But he said something like, oh, I know, like, from the player that he wasn't, like, he didn't want to leave and something like that. So I think he was kind of alluding to, like, oh, don't give him a hard time. Maybe it was something else. I don't know. You don't know what's happened.
I don't know if that's true, but that's just what it seemed like. To fund, I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, we could have been.
He fits that old.
Yeah, could have been. Yeah. Could have been that they were trying to get rid of him, and he was like, well, screw you. I'm not going to play then if you're trying to get rid of me. Or it could have been, but, like, obviously we're all looking at it from what he did last season, and we're assuming it's the same again, but I don't know.
He was going to go to Coventry for free, wasn't he? So I'm wondering if, like, that interest came about, and the owners were like, oh yeah, let's get rid of them wages, he's old, whatever.
Yeah,
like they seem to like to do. And he didn't like the fact that he was kind of being forced out, and that's why he started throwing his toys. I don't know. We're just speculating. It could be something like that for all we know, because we don't really know. But yeah, so interesting. But see if he can have an impact going through the rest of the season now. Hopefully he can, you know.
Well,
if he's there, if he's going to play and he's going to be there taking a position, then hopefully we see the best of him.
hopefully, like, as well, going back to, like, Kaplan being here, we did a podcast to me, and he said, like, it's time, like, they've either got to, like, back him now and say, like, right, we're going forward, or sack him. And maybe they've just come and backed him, and that's just had a massive lift on the squad. And he's come in and said, look, I'm here now, I'm here. I'm here for next season. Let's push on. You don't know, because they like uncertainty. Because in all that, we said, even in all that run where we like won like three games in 20 odd, whatever it was, you're thinking like, bloody hell, something's got to happen here. We're really in a bit of a downfall here. Like, we could just nosedive and get relegated. Like, the owners haven't said anything. So it was uncertainty. You would think, like I said, like, I wouldn't have been surprised if he got sacked after the Millwall game. I wouldn't have been surprised if he got sacked after another game. But now, like, maybe they've come and said they've backed him. He might have even said himself, like, I don't know. I haven't heard from the owners. Like, I know we're not performing well, but I haven't heard anything. So I think maybe just having a bit of a certainty where they've come in and said, right, we're on for the summer. You're in for next season. Let's you know, we'll be starting again. Has just lifted the place, maybe. Hopefully, anyway, because something had to change because it was awful. So I know it's only one win, so we don't want to get beside ourselves. We could lose the next five now again. So
yeah,
it's amazing what a win does, though, isn't it? Because like, it's all doom and gloom for like 20 odd games, and then you win a game, and you're like, right, it's all changed now. But you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Because some of the things to talk about for a change, rather than the same stuff. Like, oh
yeah, exactly. Yeah, rather than just like, oh, defense was poor again. Change it.
Last player really to speak about from that game is Darlin going in a right back for two games, like, which, as you mentioned, Sorunola and Norton were available on the bench, I believe, or at least Norton was on the bench, definitely, in check. I think Sorunola was.
Yeah, I think he was.
He might have come on, didn't he? He came on in the 90th minute for Ncham. But yeah, so Harry Darlin going there. Interesting one. Who's that, like the fourth or fifth option we've used our right back this season?
Yeah.
So we've had Congreve's done a shift. Oh, Ollie Cooper's done a shift there. Sorunola, Norton, Manning. Us is probably more than that then. Six or seven options we've used. Latibodia, of course. But yeah.
Finn Stevens came on like one game.
Right, Finn Stevens is eight.
Okoflex probably did a runner, wing back as well, did he?
Oh, yeah. He might have actually. Was it left or right? That's the question.
Yeah, not sure.
Crazy. So for now, it's Harry Darlin, two shifts in a row. And he's done all right, actually, to be fair.
He's done all right.
One opportunity where he's flying in with a header from the far post. It's a different option that Lattie perhaps doesn't provide so much of with his height.
Yeah, I think he's done well. I think he's done all right in those two games. I was a bit worried about that, to be honest, because
same.
I had question marks over him like defensively. So I thought, oh my God, he's going to get exposed out there on that wing. But maybe with the nature of the way that we play, we keep the ball a lot, then
less pressure. So perhaps he can
do, I think, better. In terms of going like forward and passing and stuff, I think it suits him. Like you said, less pressure than if you make a mistake in the middle. You know, it's kind of game over, isn't it? If you make a big sort of error, you know, it can happen on a right back as well, but maybe not so much. Yeah, I think it's worked. I don't know long term if that's viable, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, because I've called him up before for the runs he does going forward. He likes to think he's messy sometimes when he runs with the ball. Yeah. Probably in a better position to do those runs on the right back position than he is in centre back running forward. Because then when he does lose the ball, he's exposed in behind. Whereas if you lose the ball in right back, if you pushed up, like we want him to push up with the way we play. So someone's probably covering, like Grimes is probably covering or something. So and perhaps less pressure because of where he is in the pitch, that he can do those runs and be successful, play 1-2s perhaps. Yeah. And if he gets a bit more confidence up, then that's good for him in this. Hopefully we can see the best of him going forward. Like, I don't know, like you said, if it is the best long-term position for him, but good to see there's someone else that can do a job there. And maybe you could argue, has he done the job just as well as Latibodia in the two games that he's shown?
Yeah, well, you know my feelings on it. I think, like, I still never understood the love of Latibodia. I think, like, he works hard, but Russell Martin seems to want to play him in every game. And I think, like I said, I think the suspension just helped because he couldn't pick him and he's had to play Darlin. Strange that he played Darlin there, though, instead of Soranola, you think that would just be the natural? Because Soranola played well, didn't he? He had a couple of good games, didn't he? I think against like Blackpool was when we won at home. I think he played well, and he did have a stint there of a couple of good games. So it seemed really strange that he didn't just slot him at right back. But there we are. It's worked. But I wonder if again, just more speculation. You know, like if he's had these meetings with the owners this week or the week before, that they've said like, look, Norton obviously is not going to be here next year in a way, and Soranola's not getting renewed. He's on loan. Like, don't. You know, so Martin's like, well, okay, right, let's just start picking players we're going to be next year minus Manning, because we've got another option. But I don't know if that's an element of it.
Yeah, interesting though, but it's good to see that it worked out, obviously.
It will be interesting to see what he does next game now with Latipodia back and with Soranola as well, and Darlin, and it's Cardiff as well, so it depends who he thinks.
I feel like it's a different...
I said though, would you be confident playing Darlin in that type of game where it's like a massive game away from home?
It's tricky.
I don't know. I mean, it's okay if you're playing like, you know, we had Millwall away and then we had Bristol City at home. You think maybe you get away with it, but I think maybe like Cardiff away, you know, big game.
I don't know too much about Cardiff's team right now, but he'd be up against Callum O'Dowda probably.
Yeah.
Don't know. I haven't watched them playing recently. Obviously, they're playing quite different under the new manager. There's a lot of different players there from even earlier in the season and last season when we played them. So, yeah, interesting. Obviously, we'll touch more on that in a second. But finally, Cabango, not about his performance necessarily, but an incident that happened where maybe handball should have been a penalty to Bristol. What do we think?
I think it probably was a penalty, but I haven't really given it a second thought, to be honest, because sometimes it's a little bit of luck that you need, and we know our fair share of bad luck with penalties anyway. So I think it just... it probably was handball. I think I'd be gutted if we didn't get it, but, I'm not going to really give it a second thought because we deserve
it's
that
tricky.
Luck.
Anyway. I can see why the ref hasn't give it because he's very close. The ball... like, you know, he tries to do a little skill or something, trip it over him or knock it past, bang, go. And where it does hit his hand, it does hit his hand, right? So by letter of the law, by technicality, you could say, yeah, he should have given the penalty because it was handball. But it was like Cabango's running motion and his arm was in the location where it would be if you run in. So I can understand from the distance, the time from kick to hitting the hand, why the ref's like not giving it because it's... maybe a bit of common sense was used in that regard. By technicality, yeah, it was handball, but maybe the way that it was implemented is better because, like, a penalty for that sort of thing is a bit frustrating, even if it is technically.
I think it would have been. I think it would have been like soft on it. Would have been really frustrating, but.
The handball's not gone away. Yeah. So
I know what you're saying, though, but I think like he's got to give it, isn't he, with the law? I think we would have been absolutely we'd be sat here like saying, "Oh my god, he's got to give that." If it was the other way around,
we have been plenty of times, and we never get them. It seems.
I know. That's why I don't really.
If we don't get them all these times in the past that we should have, I can't remember the last time we had a handball penalty given to us. We don't get that many penalties at the best of times, but a handball one. Maybe that is the way they are refereeing at the moment. So, because it would have been, it's not intentional, is it? It was definitely not intentional. And maybe that's what they're looking for.
Maybe that's the way they ref it in the championship and then without VAR. Especially, maybe that's just how they. Because I think, like, if that's in the Prem and it goes to VAR, they probably give it, don't they? Yeah, because if you look at the still, though, he's like that, isn't he? His arm is up.
No, it's down there. It's down.
It's a little bit up, isn't it? No, because he's like...
I don't think it was up.
I think if you have the still shot, if you have the still shot, I think he gives it, because it's like his arm is a little bit out and it hits his hand.
Yeah, but after it hits the hand, the arm goes up. That's what happens.
Yeah, but I know. But I think if that goes to VAR in a Premier League game, I think it's Ben Holdy.
I don't think they've been all right lately with VAR. Like, when it comes to unnatural position, I don't think your arms somewhere you is that like, where do you want to put them? You know, you're not running like this. Know. That's more unnatural to me. If you're running, because he's running across the box, your arms are out, like, to an extent. They're not out you, you know, like, miles out. But I don't think where it hit him, his arm was necessarily in an unnatural position. Like I said, technically, you could say by letter of the law is handball. I'm not disputing that. And I'm not disputing this case individually, just perhaps the way that they should approach this thing that is handballs in the box going forward. The way they dealt with that, 4-0 against us, just for football in general, I think is better because, like, if you've got a really tight game and that's the sort of thing that costs a team or gives the team a win, is that right? That sort of handball?
Well, no, I agree with you. I think it's always that argument, isn't it? It's like common sense versus like the letter of the law, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I get why it's easy to give that handball in any other part of the pitch as well. And maybe you should say it should be consistent. But then the repercussions of a penalty versus a free kick on the halfway line is a lot different to this.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on anyway. Before we finish, let's touch on we'll do a full match preview for Cardiff, but we'll touch on it slightly. So I just want to mention the form, which, as much as we've just had a win, does not go in our favour at all. So the last six games have done. Cardiff have had two wins in six games with one draw. So they've only lost three of them, I think. But they were winning on the weekend against Wigan, which wasn't in my six game form. They were winning 1-0 against Rotherham when the heavens decided to open. Our form is one win in six and one draw. So say significantly worse. I mean, it's one win less. That's not significantly worse, I guess.
No, I know, but we're coming off the back of a good win as well. Before the international break, it's probably a good time for it to
I lied, by the way. It's three wins for Cardiff. I don't know why I wrote two. That's why. So I'm lying. It is significantly better. Wrong. I got it in front of me. I wrote it down wrong. I thought it was different. That's why I questioned myself. But yeah, so three wins for Cardiff, in which they've kept clean sheets in all three wins. Now, we've kept clean sheets against Cardiff in the last three derby matches against them. I believe the goals was like 4-0, 3-0, then 2-0. So if you're going to continue the trend, we're going to win 1-0. Touch wood. But yeah, so they sorted their defence out. I guess that was the first objective of a new manager. And then they try and get some goals to go with it to win some matches.
Yeah,
not winning all the time. They've still got some losses mixed in there. But if you look at their results, they lost... on the ones that got on the screen, they got a 3-1 defeat to Middlesbrough. We know Middlesbrough are a good team. We lost 3-1 to them as well. Then they beat Birmingham 2-0, beat Reading 1-0, they lost to Norwich 2-0. So if you look at the way where they're winning and where they're losing, they then beat Bristol 2-0. So we've done that. Lost to Preston 2-0. And then obviously the Rotherham game, they drew with West Brom 1-1. I guess that's a good result for them. And then the Rotherham game, they were 1-0 up. It seems like they're beating the teams around them, bottom half, and then not so much the teams that are pushing on at the top, which, whatever, if you're avoiding relegation, it's kind of all you need to be doing. But I guess we fall into the category of the teams that they've been beating recently. So,
yeah, it's a hard one to call, Neil. You say with a derby, it goes out the window, but form goes out the window. But I think, you know, didn't actually contemplate how bad a position they were in. Like, I think the win against Rotherham, which they probably would have had if it didn't get called off, would have been huge for them. But they're still only 3 points from the drop. Like,
I know they've had that good form, and it's still in 20.
And it's still only 3 points. It's not a good position to be in.
We're going to have had a 3 point deduction.
Yeah, now they've had their point deduction, but 3 points from the drop. I mean, they're in fight mode now, aren't they? They've got to be picking up points everywhere and anywhere they can get them. So, you know, I think a derby and the fact that they need point desperately, because you think like if we were in that position, 3 points from the drop, you'd be we'd be panicking now, wouldn't we? But yeah, I think it's going to be a very hard game to get anything from. You think like they're going to be so motivated to win after we've won three games in a row. They need to win to avoid relegation. I think it's going to be a bit of an onslaught, but let's see what we can do.
Do you reckon onslaught? I don't know if it'll be an onslaught.
Oh, they'd be massively up for this game.
They'd be massively up for it, but I don't think we're going to be like backs against the wall defending.
Oh, no, that's not what I mean. But I mean, like, we're going to come up against a much better Cardiff side than we've seen in the last three games that we've won. Yeah, much better.
Yeah, I think that would be.
Can't see us winning like 4-0 again.
I mean, they played West Brom at home, didn't they? And drew 1-1, and they had 11 shots to West Brom's 8. So it's decent for them. 44% possession. So you'd imagine it would be direct, and maybe, I don't know if they're playing hoofball so much, but I think a lot more direct than what we play, which we probably already know that's how they played against us forever, really, at this point. It's going to be tough. Not sure what team I would go with. But like, we've got 8 games left, and you're saying about them being in fight mode. We are 10 points clear from Huddersfield. I go out on a whim and say that we're okay now, because there's 5 teams below us that aren't in relegation, and obviously 3 that are, and I cannot see those 8 teams all picking up enough points to go ahead of us. You might see we could lose the rest of our games and slip down the order a few more positions, but I'd be so surprised to see. Well, I guess only 6 of them need to do it, but 6 teams that are below us get enough points to get over what we're on currently. And if we get one more win out of them in 8 games, I would put money on the fact that we wouldn't go down with that.
Yeah,
49.
Before the Bristol game, I thought I think it was getting a bit worrying, to be honest. But because I couldn't see where our wins were coming from. But I think I sort of said to myself, if we can just win 2 games, maybe 3, we'll be. There'll be no problem. So we've got 1. I think if we win another game, we're probably safe. But I think another 2 wins is game over. So, and I don't see us. It'll have to be something really bad. Well, you know, we'd have to win all of our games now, wouldn't we? We'd have to lose all of our games now. Sorry.
And, yeah, we'd have to lose all of our games, and several teams below us need to really significantly up their form. So if you look at the form of the team below us, I've only got the last 5 sample year, but Birmingham is only 7 points in the last 5 matches, so out of 15 available, So ours, for record, is 4. Birmingham's on 7, so 1 win more in the last 5 matches, Reading are on 1 point in the last 5 matches. QPR are on 3 points in the last 5 matches. Rotherham are also on 7. Cardiff are also on 7, but they're all, you know, lower down, so they've got bigger gap to close. And then you've got the bottom 3, which is Huddersfield, who are on 5, Blackpool, who are on 4, and Wigan, who are on 3. So the maths just isn't adding up for enough of them to move ahead of us by the end of the season based on their current form.
Yeah, I think what helps as well is I had a look at the fixtures. This might be a bit sad, but what I like to do is there's a website you can like put in all your predictions, and then it shows you like what the table's going to be. And I was sort of looking at that like worst case scenario, but I think like so many teams play each other as well. Like Cardiff, obviously, I don't know what's going to happen with that game, but they got Rotherham. I think Cardiff and Blackpool play each other. There was a few more as well. There's a few more where there was some big relegation 6-pointer games. Like we've got to play Huddersfield and Wigan. And Cardiff, so it's 3 big games there for us. But yeah, there's a lot where they all got to play each other. So I think you're right. I think like it's going to be something absolutely tragic if we get dragged in from here now.
Yeah, I mean, look, we don't want it to be the case, but I'm 90% confident that we've done enough, and it shouldn't be that attitude that we've done enough at all. Don't get me wrong, but I know a lot of people have been worried about it. That Bristol win should put a little bit of calmness in. And hopefully with a bit of calmness, we can end the season quite well. Obviously, going and get a good result in this game would really significantly boost things, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And if we can then take the form of because a mini derby against Bristol, and then if you get a derby win against Cardiff, like that should be a good foundation to end the season on. If we can do it, like I know it's going to be tough, don't get me wrong, even a draw, like I wouldn't mind at this point going away up there.
You can't take a draw
at all, and maybe a little bit of extra motivation. You should tell the players, like, you could beat Cardiff in the next game, and based on Huddersfield's result, they could be in the bottom three.
Yeah,
probably not though, based on goal difference, but they'd be on the same points. But I, like, obviously we're talking in assumptions now, but that could be something. There was something that one of the Cardiff players said the other day, actually. I saw someone tweeting about it, saying you should put this up on the wall in the training ground, but I can't remember what he was saying.
Oh, they said they put the manager was putting the league table up everywhere, wasn't he?
What to say, like, close the gap, like?
Like, you need to win games. They put in the league table. I read that and I thought, that just not increased the pressure.
Well, it's a big game to have pressure. Like, when we played them recently, there's a fly flying around, if you wonder why I'm hitting the air. It's a big game to, with a lot of pressure, like a derby match like this, to be having when you're in the relegation fight.
Yeah, I'm sorry, just looking at the fixture as well. Cardiff have got to play us, then Blackpool. So that's two massive games. And then they've got to play...
When's the rematch of Rotherham?
Oh, I don't know when that'll be.
Imagine that turns around and they lose that game from the position they were in. They'd be...
That's quite bad, though, isn't it? They'd be gutted with that. Well,
Did you see the... Obviously, I know when someone put it in the group saying, like, it's been called off because of the rain, and people are like, oh, how can games get called off because of the rain in 2023? But did you see the pitch?
Yeah, it was awful. That's a relatively new stadium though as well. That's just, you know,
like the ball,
I think the downpour was ridiculous.
It just stopped, it just like didn't go anywhere. Yeah.
I think the downpour was ridiculous, but I think the
that drainage is awful though. Like
the that's what I'm saying, like, the drainage should be better than that in the championship. And did you see like the videos of the groundsman?
Yeah, like the groundsman sweeping it off, like nothing.
Sweeping it off, yeah, sweeping it off, and then like sweeping it back on. Because I don't think they were playing very well, were they, Rotherham? I think by all accounts they weren't having a good game. So I don't know, bit of gamesmanship maybe.
I don't think he was going to get rid of that on his own. It wasn't going anywhere, was it?
Well, no,
why is it staying there? They should be draining. New stadium.
Yeah, it should be. It should be getting drained 100%.
Rotherham gets called off quite a lot for weather, doesn't it? Like snow and ice and stuff. So it's poor, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, but that's going to be an absolutely massive game when that comes around again. Because you think, I'm just looking, they've got to play us, Blackpool. They've got to play Huddersfield as well at home, return of Neil Warnock. And then apart from that, looking at some of their other fixtures, they've got like Sunderland, Sheffield United away, Watford away, and Burnley away, last game of the season. So, you know, I what I'm saying is I can't see, you know, Cardiff winning all them games, you know, Huddersfield winning 4 or 5 games, you know. Just don't look who Huddersfield have got, actually. Obviously, they've got us and Cardiff. Blackburn, Watford, they got Middlesbrough on the weekend, in the next game, Sunderland away. You know, they've got winnable games, mind. Reading at home.
Yeah.
They've got a nice little run in.
Well, I said the games that they've been winning are those sort of teams. So I wouldn't be shocked to see them stay up. I think they'll stay up, to be honest. But
I think Rotherham are in more danger, I do personally. I think they're sort of dropping like a stone.
No, but again, Rotherham have got better form than Huddersfield, Blackpool and Wigan. So
yeah, don't forget Blackpool.
Wigan, I think, gone now with that.
Yeah, I think Wigan's point deduction. Yeah,
they were in 22nd, only 2 points off Cardiff without that. And now they've gone to the bottom all of a sudden. And, well, they 5 points off. That just changes the picture completely. I know it's only 2 wins still, but 2 wins at this stage of the season is a lot.
It's harsh, isn't it? But, you know, we say about our owners, right?
I think they should have had it 2 seasons ago when Wickham went down.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it Wickham? No, it was Derby, wasn't it?
I thought it was Wigan they were arguing with.
No, it was Derby, because I remember they had to do like 2 fixture lists. The fixtures came out and they were still under review because...
Oh, maybe then. Sorry.
They had to do like a fixture list if Wickham were in the championship, and if Derby were in the championship, one of them was in League One. They had to do 2.
Oh, fair. Well, Yeah, I know it's down to the owners.
And then Wickham would have stayed up. But...
they got the rules are there, and they've got to enforce them.
Well, it's because they didn't pay players, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you've got to be, like, I don't want to repeat. So maybe got the facts wrong there, but you don't want to repeat of that where that penalty is applied after the season if it's this season's penalty to be applied. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then, like, for example, a team like Rotherham then goes down because of it, and we're going to stay up, and that 3 points might change that now. So
yeah, I don't know. I think like that's what we've also got to be careful with. I know like we say about our owners and whatever, not spending, but we're not going to be in that position. I think there's a lot of teams in the Championship at the moment that are really struggling. I think like Cardiff reported like a massive loss, didn't they? And Sheffield United are being looked at.
And Burnley got a transfer embargo.
But you're just spending nilly-nilly.
Like what's going on there?
Yeah, but that's just such a stupid rule because they got a transfer embargo, but they're going to go up anyway, aren't they? It's an EFL punishment.
Why is it not consistent? It should be consistent with the league system. If it's in the same country, if you're getting some sort of penalty or like embargo or something that applies and then you get a promotion, even if it's run by a different organisation, they should be a consistent.
Yeah, I know. I agree. But this is where the system...
They've accounted for it, haven't they, in January, and they're like, oh, well, we'll get a couple more. We'll spend a bit more money if they... do us an embargo, we're going up anyway, so it doesn't
matter. But you think like I think Stoke did the same thing, didn't they, when they came down the same year as us, they spent, and I think they are in big trouble now, Stoke are, financially, because of that, because obviously they spent big on their parachute payments.
Nothing's happened. Yeah.
Sheffield United I think are in a similar position because they've been down for like two seasons now, have they?
That's probably it's why the they're like McBurney's contract running out.
Exactly. And then so you think the cost of these teams, even though everyone's looking at them going, oh, yeah, they're spending, oh, look, the owners are not backing us, all these teams are spending. If they don't go up, if you can imagine Burnley didn't go up this year with the amount of money they spent and with a transfer embargo, they'd be straight down. They'd be fighting relegation maybe not next year, but maybe like the year after. You look at Stoke now, a drop in like a stone there, like in that bottom sort of area, aren't they?
Well, I think you've got to be the 13th.
Yeah, I know, but you've got to be really careful.
But they've kind of picked up recently.
I know. You've got to be really careful, haven't you? Like, you know, I know, like, we want the owners to spend, but I would take, like, you know, being a bit more solid financially than willy-nilly spending. But we spent, like, the ninth most amount in the Championship anyway this year. We spent 2 million. There's not many clubs that can spend.
We've spoken about that, haven't we? Like, it's not so much, the back-end issue was January, isolated.
Yeah,
January.
Yeah, I know.
The spending this year just wasn't correctly planned and action. Like the Darling fee, the Fisher fee last year, whoever's making decisions to lump a lot of money on certain players who haven't then perhaps, the return of that investment has not been there. And then as a result, other areas of our squad have suffered and haven't been like properly addressed, like the right back situation and the left back situation. So obviously Mann is there now, but there's no cover for him, is there? There's no one there. Like we had a better, but again, another waste of money. So the money's been spent sometimes, wasn't in January. So that's that isolated non-backing issue in January. We should have been back to January. It was quite clear we needed to be, especially after the loan recalls. But overall, they have put some money in this season, and I think they did when Russell Martin got hired as well. He brought in quite a few players last summer when he first came to the club.
I think I did see somewhere else though as well that I saw on Twitter there was like a table of like the net spend in the Championship in the last like three seasons, I think it was, and we were bottom of the league, but obviously it meant that we'd sold much more than what we brought in. So, like,
but I think a lot of people don't realize how much all these clubs you mentioned are losing all this money. It's not all lost from player sales. Like, I think it's expensive running a football club, and Championship clubs don't bring in that much money until they sell a player.
Yeah.
So we do have moaned about it. We moaned about the downs of money not all going back into the squad, but we'd be silly to like sit here and say that we understand exactly where all our money goes. We don't really. I haven't trawled. I've had a brief nose sometimes of when the accounts are published, but I don't think any fan moaning about it on Twitter. Maybe some of them have, but like most of them wouldn't have looked at that with a full understanding of everything that's on the paper in front of them. That's the bottom line. So like we all have an opinion on it and we all talk about it, and
yeah, that's right.
But it's the money's obviously gone. They wouldn't be doing this stuff with the loan notes and that if they were taking all this money out of the club either, would they? Like, it just wouldn't make sense.
No, exactly. I think I think we're just not in a bad financial position at the moment for a football club. Yeah. And there's a lot of clubs around us that are in real trouble, I think. Yeah. But you know, so I'll take that.
We're not clearing the owners of any wrongdoing, right? There's a difference between between making the club financially stable, which I think we credited them for under the Steve Cooper era quite a lot, that they have done that. And we said at the time maybe they haven't been that bad recently. There's a difference to that than it is to being a good owner and managing the club from the owner's perspective in a good way.
Absolutely.
They've managed the finances perhaps in a good way, but maybe with that being the main goal, some of the football sides have suffered.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So I'm sure there'll be a lot of.
Well, hopefully there's a change on the horizon. Anyway, like we said, hopefully there's things are going to change. But no, we can only hope.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a good place to call it a day. Maybe we'll do a pre-match for Cardiff if we get time to squeeze that in. So a little bit more detail.
Yep.
Don't know what to say altogether, perhaps team selections and that.
Yeah, I think there's, speaking of that though, just quickly before we finish, I think there is still Cardiff tickets available. I think it's general sale at some point this week, so.
I would try go, but I'm working.
I know, on a Saturday, but yeah, I was quite surprised at that.
Could try book all. You've got to go up on the bus probably, have you?
Oh, don't even get me started. It's the worst day, like. I mean, it's great when you win, but it's an absolute nightmare.
Is it? How much is the bus on top of the ticket?
It's, well, they didn't even, I haven't seen it, but they haven't released it, but it was like 43 quid
I'd
for
argue,
bus and ticket.
Right. I'd argue that if the bus is enforced as a bubble, that should come free with the ticket.
Well, they do now. They're clever. So they said it's £43 for ticket and bus because you can't buy separate. So
yeah, but it's not £43 for a ticket for any other match of the year, is it?
No, but I guess if it was like, I don't know, say it was 33 quid for the ticket. You'd have to pay
for somebody, for example, who might be a Swansea fan who might live near Cardiff, even within, I don't know, maybe they're in walking distance or public transport bus distance or taxi distance, all of a sudden they gotta make their way to the stadium in Swansea to get a bus.
It's ridiculous.
And I know that's frustrating from a logistics sense, but I just mean financially. Like, the option's taken away from you from an enforced situation. So if that situation is enforced, you shouldn't have to then also pay out for that enforced situation. Like, if you want to bubble it, then you should subsidise the fans who then have to pay more than what they would have. A lot of people might have gone on the bus anyway and would pay for it. And a lot of people, it might be cheaper to get the fan bus than it would be to drive and park, perhaps depending on distance, or get a train or whatever. But you haven't got the option. So I don't feel like you can charge when you haven't got the option.
But it's the police that enforce it though, isn't it?
Well, the police should pay for it then.
Yeah, but they enforce it as a bubble because they get all the overtime.
Well, that's fine.
And I think the club has to I don't know if it's true, but I wouldn't be surprised if the clubs have to subsidise the police support.
Yeah, but who makes that decision? Like, if someone is for the police are making that decision, then they should be the one to foot the cost. Because yeah,
I'm not sure.
What if a club was like, well, I'm all right with it being not a bubble. I don't want to pay you. And
it's a pain in the ass because you've got to go like 3 o'clock kickoff. So the bus is going to be like 11 o'clock.
And then
it takes like 40 minutes to get to Cardiff, and then you've got to sit in those services and go one bus at a time, and you sat there for like 2 hours if you're the last bus to go in, and you're there just in time for kickoff. And then afterwards it's sort of similar, it's just like one bus out at a time, and it's literally like the longest away day for the shortest trip.
Yeah, I don't know, you'll have people who are football fans that'll be like, well, why is all this money being spent on a football match? But like, if the police are deciding that that needs to happen, then I just, why should the fans have to pay for that?
I think it's still the only bubble.
When it's only a few idiots that probably cause the actions that result in a bubble match, you know, why should the why should Barry with his two sons have to pay extra to take them up to the biggest game?
That's another issue. But I think like football's got so much worse now. I wouldn't be taking my
another conversation then, wasn't it?
Yeah. I know. Yeah, sorry, I know what you're saying. But I agree. Like, why should they have to pay the extra for it? But I think it's still the only bubble trip now in the UK, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's probably the reason, because of the cost. But like, what's going to cost the police more, paying for the bubble and perhaps you're reimbursing the cost, putting the buses on for the fans, yeah? The police footing that cost. Or if they're that concerned about the carnage and the drama that results from a non-bubble match, how much is that going to cost them? So, you know, if they think they're saving money by putting the bubble on, which must be the reason they're doing it, because I know you're saying, oh, it's not about money, it'll be about the fact there's no violence and stuff. It's like, yeah, but why do the police want no violence ultimately? Probably because they don't, you know, it's more issues for them long term if they don't resolve it there and then, yeah. And obviously you want to keep people safe, that's what their job is, but look at the way that the world is at the moment and the country is at the moment, everything boils down to money and resources. So they made the decision that this is worth the resources. So I just think they should subsidise the fans.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And personally, I will say, like, having gone a few times away to Cardiff, I think I wouldn't feel that safe if it wasn't a bubble trip.
And that's fair. And that's obviously why it is there. Yeah. But again, like 43 pound for the closest game in the season, for closest away match.
Yeah.
Just seems a bit...
Well, maybe that's why it's not sold out yet. I'm sure by the time this goes out, they probably would have sold all the tickets, but yeah, I'm quite surprised they made it to the third window of sale. Well, I don't think they did last year. But maybe there could be a combination of that. The cost, the fact that it's like an absolute all day.
Or maybe then, if the police don't foot the bill, maybe the home and the away club, because obviously the other one's going to be bubble as well, go half each. So, like, I don't know, Swans pay for the buses for their fans and Cardiff pay for the buses for their fans on the other journey or whatever. And if it's a cup game, you split it. Like, I just...
Yeah, I know, but you got to pay to go to the game anyway. If it's not a bubble trip, you've got to drive or you get the bus anyway. That.
I know, but like, how much if we car share and went up, it'd be like a lot cheaper.
Yeah, it'd be
everyone's paying 15 quid for a bus each. Do
you know what I know what you're saying. They got a bit of a monopoly then, haven't they? Because you have no choice.
It's a question that I've never seen it spoken about. Obviously, didn't know all the details. They just mentioned it, but I just think that's a point worth sort of having a look at, really, because I think people will continue to do it, continue to force that charge until it's questioned. Like in a similar way to the way that we all pay over the odds for football in the UK to watch on TV, right? And a completely different topic, but
right.
In terms of enforced cost on fans, anyone that can will just take advantage, and it's just another example of that, I think, personally. But that conversation is getting brought up quite a lot, I think, online, I've seen recently, so hopefully
the TV.
Is done with that, yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe we can talk about it when we do the Cardiff preview, but I was going to sort of touch on, like, it's not on TV again, the away game. So, I think it is coming up a lot now, and I think that's definitely got to change, and people are more vocal about it now. So it's quite good.
I can't remember what I saw, but obviously it's worse for championship teams, but
something like
80 quid a month to have Sky, to have BT, Amazon, and Welsh Rose Football? I guess you need a TV license to watch FA Cup games in theory, or all of them, really, actually, because it's all live. So you need the TV license and you need Sky, BT, and Amazon. Yeah. Have DAZN had any?
They don't have Premiership games. They have them.
Okay. Anyway, so whatever, 80 quid a month. And then you go to America and it's like $40-$50 or something ridiculous. And you can watch all of the games, everything. Whereas here, you get 10 out of, sorry, like 5, not all the Premier League games. How many Prem games are there a week? 10?
I think you get 10 a week. And I think, it's probably about 5, isn't it? Because it's usually like one Saturday early, one Saturday late, and then 3, maybe 2 on Sunday and 1 on Monday night. And that's if they pick them all up. So
yeah, and then they'll have a championship game or two, probably, isn't it? So like they'll have 5 Prem and then some of the other ones. So like, and there's 12 games in the championship on a match week. So if you're a championship club, it's even worse. You're paying the same amount of money, but even less airtime.
I think it's ridiculous.
And then you go to like the people who were doing the comparisons in like America, who pay less and get all of the games to choose from.
Yeah, but you can understand why people use like streaming services now. And I know it's like, you're right. I think what's happened is that I think streaming services, like, you know, illegal services have become so much better, and more people, they climbing down on it because more and more people are buying that because it's cheaper and we're in like, you know, a cost of living crisis. Why would you spend 80 quid for Sky? It's ridiculous because think of us as Swans fans now. You've got like, I pay like £400 for my season ticket, right? So that's, I'm assuming then I go to every home game. Some I miss for whatever reason, but assuming I go to every home game, right? All of our games this year, I can't think of a game that we've played away that's been picked up on Sky. I think it's only been home games. We had Rotherham on Sky Monday night a couple of weeks back. The Cardiff home game was on Sky. I can't think, apart from maybe the red button games, obviously, which are also crap because they only show like one camera angle, no replays, can't tell if a sub is coming on. The commentary is usually like for another game or it's out of sync. So if you're paying like 400 quid for your season ticket and say 80 quid a month for Sky, so you're looking at north of like 900 quid. Yeah, well, 900 quid
if
for
you're
Sky.
Sky 12 months that's a year, I mean, that's like 800. What's that? Nine.
Yeah, that's like 900
for Sky,
quid.
Yeah.
Yeah, 900 quid for Sky plus your season ticket. You're looking at about 1,300, £1,400. And then, luckily, I've had to pay 43 quid to go and watch the Cardiff game.
Yeah,
but if I couldn't get all the away games we've been to this year, we've been to a handful, five or six, whatever we've done. But then, so if you add all that in, you're probably looking at 1,600, 1,700 quid that you pay to watch your team. Then on the off chance then, say I couldn't get a Cardiff ticket because maybe they sold out in the first window or whatever, then I cannot legally watch that game.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And I paid 1,700 quid. Happening.
And like, I know the argument's always the same argument. People won't go to games anymore. I just think that's just not the case. I think that's...
It's not the case because so many people are streaming services now anyway, and people still go to games.
That's a poor argument that has just been there all the time because no one questioned it, and they can't get away with that anymore. It's not the reason. Like,
money is the reason, isn't it? Of course it is.
Yeah, money's having the monopoly, having people still paying for this stuff is the reason. But they can do that still and offer more. I don't understand why they can't. Like I've suggested before, like a follow your team package where you just get access to that team's games for however much a month. Like, if everyone done that for their own team, and then if they want the other games that are on TV on the general channels, you know, you have a similar system to what's there now. But I don't need all that for me. I'm not paying for all of that already. But if you say to me, here's a monthly fee to watch all the Swans games, then you might get me. I'm not paying
that. I would pay that. If someone said, like, you know, I don't know, say it was 30 quid a month and you could watch all the Swans games, home and away, I would pay it. And I would still have my season ticket. And it just meant that, like, the away games that I can't go to, or like some of the home games that I do miss for some reasons, then I can watch them easily. And I don't see, like you said, you can watch them in other countries, but we are the ones that are here, like paying, you know, near enough £2,000 a year, and then you don't get to watch it. I think it's ridiculous. But I think you're right, though. I think it's coming now, because I think like people are getting more annoyed about it.
We saw that they were doing it in COVID and then they took it away. But the only reason that it's even getting questioned now is because the authorities, or Sky, whoever it is, are trying to clamp down and go after all these fire sticks. So they're doing like random spot checks on people's houses, like knocking on doors if they reckon they got a fire stick and stuff. So, and then people are kicking off saying, okay, well, I wouldn't have one if you give me an actual legit option to watch the football. I don't have one. So what's my substitute, because my team's game is not on TV. You're not providing a way for me to even do that, to watch that. And then you're kicking off that I got this stick, so I can actually do that. Like, provide me an option then.
Exactly. Yeah, well, this guy's got to come in soon. But it's like even the Bristol City game was on Sunday at 12:30. It's not on TV. You can't watch it.
Yeah, why is it on 12:30 on Sunday then?
Well, they move it to 12:30 on a Sunday for the police, don't they? Again, for that. And then it's not even on TV.
Bubble, but they moved Bristol, which wasn't.
I think it's the Cardiff game has annoyed me the last 2 years. I mean, luckily I've gone, but I know, like, for example, like my dad is not going to go to Cardiff away. He's in his 60s. He doesn't want to go and sit in that away end, understandably so. But he goes to every home game. He likes to watch the game. He wants to watch that Cardiff game. He cannot watch it.
Yeah, it's just a joke. So, it's just ridiculous. Like, I don't know what. Like, you've got all these lower club teams struggling for finances. Why don't you allow them to have the option to sell and do their own broadcast?
Yeah.
Generate their own money.
Because they're not going to pay. They're not going to, like, pay for Sky anyway. Well, like they might pay for Sky because
Wickham.
I mean, what I mean is they're not showing their games anyway. So, you know, we're lucky the Championship games are even on the red button, and I know it's really poor, but at least we have that. League One games, I don't think are on the red button, or
no,
or League Two, as far as I'm aware. I don't think they get. I don't know if you can use the iFollow. I don't know if that's legal. I don't know.
A lot of clubs might not be able to afford to set up themselves, but that's where a third party can come in and do it for them, you know, and share some of the revenue. Like, that could be a good way of trying to put some more money directly into the lower league teams.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Sky don't care about lower league anyway, so I'm not saying do it for the Premier League teams. But that's when you move over to Sky, and they should provide an option to show all of the games, because they're all recorded, they're all, like, commented on, and, you know, all over the world. So it's there,
just not cameras there, like,
to watch it. But when it comes to the lower leagues, allow a system where the money can go directly from fans into the club, so they're not, if they don't go and watch the games, they're still benefiting with resources.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying, because they're not going to show the games anyway on Sky. So what difference does it make if, you know, say they charged, you know, a tenner for a fan to watch it online, and it goes into the club, then what does that matter? And they're not going to show the game on Sky anyway, so they're not taking business off them.
Yeah.
That money's just going straight into the club.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then how many times we've got to, you know, like I said, I went through all the money you've got to pay to watch it, and then you think, right, what's on tonight? It's Liverpool and Wolves for the fifth time this season. It's just like, I don't want to watch it. I've got to that point now. I think, like, when you're a bit younger, you want to watch, you kind of watch every game you can possible, don't you? But, like, now when you have, like, you're a bit older, different priorities and whatever, I look at the fixtures and I think, oh, it's Liverpool and Wolves on TV again. It's like, I don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
Just can't be bothered anymore. I'd rather just go out and have a meal or something.
Something changes soon. But
I've seen this game 100 times. So, yeah. There we go.
Yeah, but anyway, we kind of extended on about stuff there, but that's fine. We'll put it to some good use on YouTube. But we'll end it there. It's been a long one, so hopefully people are still here listening now, because I think some good, interesting conversations at the end. I'm sure we'll pick them back up at some point, because
yeah,
the conversation does reappear now and again. But yeah. So cheers for joining me again, Lee. As always, everyone, if you're still here, thank you for your support. Let us know in the comments if you agree with stuff that we were saying, or tell us your opinion otherwise. And don't forget to click the big red subscribe button to help us grow as a channel. Had a little bit of a good momentum recently, so it'd be good to keep that going. I think it's like 60% of people who watch the videos generally aren't subscribed. So please do us a favor. If it's one thing you could do today, we would really appreciate it if you can subscribe. And on that note, we shall see you next time, before or maybe after Cardiff game, whenever we get a chance. So have a good one.
See you soon. Sports Social Podcast Network.